Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bungus. Ayers Forfar. Blake Murphy. So, the Sox scored Friday, which is bigger than anything else that's happening in the city today, obviously. And for those of you listening on the podcast, Blake Murphy has chosen The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel to open the show. And I will tell you this. I love that song, first of all. Like, I love that song. Like, it's one of the prettiest songs ever. But I think it's inappropriate. I think it's inappropriate today. You guys know me. I can be as negative as they come, you know? I get often accused of, JD, why are you so negative? Would you not say that I get accused of that from time to time?
I would say that is an accurate statement,
you would.
JD.
No, that's not accurate. I'm saying I'm falsely accused of being negative. However, I get accused of it. I'm falsely accused. I'm misrepresented many times. However, I don't feel bad. I feel sick. Last night, I sat. So I watched the game alone last night. It was the first one that I didn't watch with a friend. That I just sat there and I went, I'm locking in. I had good vibes. It was my mom's birthday.
Oh,
I just felt the city. It was a beautiful day. And I thought to myself, the Toronto Maple Leafs, of which I have not seen advance in the first round since Blake and I were in high school, trying to skateboard poorly, they're going to do this. They are going to do this damn thing tonight. And they didn't. And I sat there and I was sick. I felt truly sick last night. I really did. That puck went in the net. And it was, again, I'm always the same way in overtime. I don't know about you guys, but like the goalie scrambled. There's bodies everywhere. And my first thought is always, that goal doesn't count. Because I'm a sore loser, and that's just my initial instinct, is there's no way that counts. Show me the thing that's going to disallow this goal, and then I will have new life. But they lost, and I felt sick, and I know everybody feels sick, because they're going to Game 7. And there are those of you that said, Game 6 is not Game 7, okay? Game 7 is Game 7. And if they lose that game, fine. We'll litigate this team, and we'll talk about this team, and we'll crush them for being eternal losers, and everyone will have their visceral moment. But the Toronto Maple Leafs last night, I'm going to say this. In my mind, against all odds, looked like a mature hockey team that was ready for that moment. And I think that's why I'm almost the most sick, is it's not that they lost. It's not that they lost. It feels like I'm the most sick because they showed up. And I think the Leafs are better. And I want to know if you two felt the same way. But like, I thought in that hockey game, they carried the play. I thought that they were fine with the physicality. I thought that they just responded perfectly. We'll get into all the major players in it, but because I want to shut up and stop ranting. But is it worse to, like, this is the weird part of the question. Is it worse that they played so well and lost? Like, is it harder to swallow today than had we just been able to be same old Leafs and they got pummeled and we get to come on here and hate them? Like, the one thing the Leafs were good for is letting us have visceral, emotional, angry reactions. And now it's like they're finding the newest way to lose, which is they're going to be the better team and lose. Like, no, I don't know how to deal with this reality. Like, this is we're entering new territory here.
So, in defense of the song choice, a couple things. First of all, if you don't want me to have control of the aux cord, respond to the text in the group chat about who's taking the aux cord that day. You just went for like four and a half minutes going from I don't feel bad to actually it's worse that they played good. I am justified in playing some emotional songs today because you're already going through it. However, yes, they were the better team in overtime last night. They were the better team in that game last night. They've been the better team on balance in this series so far. If you were ever going to have confidence in a game seven, well, that's probably because you're a fan of a different hockey team. But if you're ever going to have confidence in a game seven as a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, they have shown you over the last two games and over the course of the series what you need to see to think, hey, if there's any justice in this thing, they're the better team. They're better than Tampa Bay. They'll beat Tampa Bay at home on Saturday.
I think that's an accurate way to view it.
Yeah, I know, and this is what it's going to make today so weird. And I obviously we want to have people text in and react in. And again, at E. Blake Murphy, at JD Bunkus, at Eilish Forfar, send in text 590-590. I am curious to just see how people are kind of feeling after that one today. Blake, you're right. This is one where I'm going to go back and forth on. This is your classic, oh, I'm going to contradict myself 10 million times, because it is emotional. Like, I really want the Leafs to advance. And I've said this before, but I care so deeply about this fan base just having a moment of happiness. Like, that's why we're kind of pathetic right now. Like, them winning that game five and coming back, I went, just enjoy it, everybody, because we've had nothing. You know, like, I'm defending Leafs fans, saying, who cares if they celebrate things like it's the Super Bowl? Let them have it. We joked yesterday on the show how winning a first round, honest to God, how different is it going to feel than winning the Cup? It's going to feel better to win round one than it would to win round two, which is insane, but that's just where we are with this franchise. That's how brutal it's been. And even last night, I could tell, like, I didn't get texts from my friends who are fans of other hockey teams, because they knew that, in a weird way, that's like, I don't know, maybe it is worse. But I just feel more, like, I feel worse about the loss, but I feel more optimistic about the future, is I think the way that you put that. And I don't know how to reconcile those two feelings, like, in clashing with one another.
I think it can be a bit of both, and that's fine, because going into game seven, we look for ways that the Leafs might have an edge. And I think we did see that last night in a game where they ultimately, I think, deserve to win. And that's tough, because sometimes in the game of hockey, it's sports and you don't win the games that you deserve to win. So, like, that's a tough, settling feeling. But if they had gone into Tampa yesterday and had an absolute disaster of a showing like they did in game, I guess that was four, would we feel better? Probably feel worse about going into game seven. So tiny little bit of, we use this word, momentum. Well, maybe not, but confidence, or understanding that you have been the better team majority of the time of this series, that you're back on home ice with that little bit of an edge. Those are things that I look at if I'm going into that game as a fan, or I'm going into that game as a player. Hey, you know, we're not out of this. We've now gone down two goals in the last two games and clawed our way back into a competitive game. Like, that's something really positive. Although it does suck, because why are we starting games so slow? So, like, there's a...
I didn't think they started slow yesterday, though. I thought that they just got tough.
Slow is the wrong word, but starting from behind.
From behind, yeah.
Starting from behind. That's tough. You know, it's a tough playoff beast to start the game down two goals. Yeah, they definitely played a better game. But if you're looking at ways to convince yourself that this could be a different game seven, I still think there are a lot of reasons. But it doesn't help to wake up this morning or to watch it last night to have the gut rot that it felt like sitting on my couch watching that happen and think, oh my God, like, how does this continue to happen? How are we so cursed? You know, how does the game slip away when we deserve to win? And then you start looking at the tiny little things that went wrong, like, oh, well, maybe not tiny, but backwards giveaways and penalties that shouldn't have been penalties. Yeah. And then you start to nitpick things and you're like, well, that could have been a much different outcome. And that's the frustrating thing, is because it felt like every little mistake was amplified by Tampa and they capitalized. And that was the biggest indicator between a very tight game, which ultimately you lost by one little scramble in front of the net.
Yeah, that was the toughest part of going through it for me, I think, was that it really did feel like every time the Leafs made a mistake, it was punished, and that mistake ended up in the back of their net or very close in the back of their net, and Tampa didn't play their best game, and that didn't happen the same way at the other end. And maybe that's, hey, Tampa recovers a little better. Maybe Toronto didn't take advantage of it enough. Certainly in overtime, I thought the Leafs were a little guilty of trying to find kind of the perfect scoring opportunity instead of, you know, Tampa's strategy was, well, let's throw it on net and see if chaos shakes out our way. But yeah, if you're a Leaf fan who, you know, was expecting the other shoe to drop at some point when they were playing well, I think that element of every time you made a mistake, you paid for it. And that's not universal in hockey. That wasn't universal in that game, but it was true for the Leafs for the most part. I think that was probably the hardest part of it in real time.
Okay, so to me, this is the part where this is the part that scares me. Because, Eilish, you said the whole thing about, like, you feel more optimistic, and I feel more optimistic, and you go, okay, well, everything bad happened to the Leafs, it went that way. Like, the only mistakes that they made were punished, as Blake just put it. And as you said, they played better and they didn't start slow, but the pucks went in their net. They still responded, blah, blah, blah. They showed all this. They've showed resilience. They played well. They carried the play, whatever. All the things that you want to line up. And they still lost. And I think this is going to be the million-dollar question is, do you guys actually feel as though that's easier for the Leafs to respond? Because, like, I would think that human nature would actually be, now it's harder. Like, you played so well, and you still lost. And that's why when you're like, oh, when you start to do the crazy things like, are we cursed, like you said, Ailish, I feel like that's how you get there. Like, if you no-show, you go, oh, we have something to blame. We have something. We didn't do something. We get to use the John Cooper thing from two games in a row where he goes, we made it easy on them. The Leafs didn't make it easy on them. They made it impossible on them, and they still lost. And that's going to be, I think, the final test for this group is, like, can you overcome that sickening feeling and that disappointment? Is that harder?
See, I took that differently. And yes, there's the sickening feeling for sure, and it's harder to get over that. But the idea that Tampa's advantages in this game came to fruition through Toronto mistakes, to me, that says, look, when you're controlling what you can control, the ghosts haven't been able to rear their head. You controlled what you could control in games 1, 3, and 5 and game 6. Mm-hmm. And once you got down in game 2, when you are doing the things that are within your control, the series has gone your way. And so if you're pointing to, hey, Tampa Bay's only golden, not only golden opportunities, but their best opportunities of that game and their best moments of that game came off Toronto mistakes, I take that in the room and I say, look, that's more stuff that we can control. We didn't control 100% of the things that we could control. We didn't play our best game. That's not, you know, it's not some fluky bounce off a dump in that kicks out in front of the net while Campbell's behind the net trying to play it. It's, hey, you made a mistake and you paid for it. That's stuff you can iron out. And that's kind of what I asked for all series was, give me actual stuff that you can improve on, not, well, the ghosts, well, the ethereal. So I don't know. That's how I take it. But also I probably come at this stuff with a little different of a brain, a bad brain, as it were.
Well, that's exactly how I would approach it. If I was on the Maple Leafs and I was heading into game 7, that's the way that you convince yourself also to not nitpick the things that you can't control, as you mentioned, but hey, if you know that you were 3 mistakes away, you have a little bit of more attention to detail in game 7. Like, game 7 is every single thing is amplified. You make one mistake and you don't have another game to come back. So the level of urgency and the, that's why game 7s are a really special beast, is because there is so much tension in that game that you need to think like, hey, we were, as I said, one bounce away from ending this series. If we play the same way, if the Leafs play the same way on game 7 on Saturday tomorrow, oh my God, sorry, tomorrow, I feel like they can win that series. You know, like, mm-hmm. It's not like a massive step needs to be done. And that's the thing that for me, yes, it's hard to swallow as a fan because you had that chance last night. You were in extra time. You could have scored one goal and it would have been over. But if you're walking into the dressing room at Scotiabank Arena on Saturday, you know that you just have to play just as well as you played yesterday. You can't control the whistles. That's going to happen. You can't control, you know, if Vasilevsky has a great game, and he did, like he kind of showed up finally and he had some good saves. But if they play the same way they played last night, I do believe that they can win this series. So that's a very motivating thing going into Saturday. You don't need to completely shift everything you've done.
They can. This is actually making me feel worse. I'm not going to lie. This is making me feel worse. But well, no, because game 7s are a total coin toss. And yeah, if the Leafs play that way, they lost, right? They lost. And Blake, like, getting to your point about how you want to put it is, okay, well, let's clear up these mistakes and let's figure this out. Mm-hmm. Really, what were your mistakes? It was one bad drop pass, right? It was a phantom call. And I want to talk about the officiating, and I feel very vindicated today, at least in terms of why I hate inconsistent whistles or why I hate the way that these things go. But you got one phantom call. By the way, the Hedman one was definitely a penalty. People were freaking out about that.
Yeah, he got him in the throat.
Like, yeah, he got him in the throat with a stick.
That was like, he basically tried to decapitate him accidentally,
people went, well, Hedman lifted the stick, and you're like, yeah, but that's the game. Like, there's a lot of people that I guess that don't really watch a lot of hockey or maybe don't know the rules, whatever. It just like, you're responsible for your stick, and you can't have that happen. And Kerfoot got way too aggressive on that play, mm-hmm. which he was actually playing That play was awesome. He had Victor Hedman in a tough spot on a penalty kill, and then he just got a little overzealous. But either way, it's like you made so few mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is like you didn't have these all moment after moment where there were mistakes and they punished you. You're right, Blake. Like you made a couple mistakes, and all of them ended up in the back of your net. Like, all of them. And that's what I'm saying about the snake bit nature of you. Like, when you guys go out in the world and you put your best foot forward, right? You put your best foot forward, you had your Sunday best on, and you go out there and you do your best, and you fall short. Is that not when you start to feel like the world is against you?
Sometimes. But
never happens to me.
Yeah, like, what attitude do you want to take into a game seven, right?
Like, no, what attitude I want versus what attitude is, like, human nature. Like, these are the things is that, Blake, we're saying this in terms of, like, the three of us. There's going to be different guys in that dressing room who respond to this, I think, differently than others.
Yeah, I get that for sure.
Yeah.
And, like, look, I get what you're saying. Hey, it's not realistic to say, well, if we play a perfect hockey game, we'll win. You're going to make some mistakes throughout the game. You know, I know the Kerfoot one is going to stand out. I know the overall faceoff stats ended up in Toronto's favor, and Matthews had a monster night in the dot. But I thought there were a lot of, like, key faceoffs they lost, which is really uncharacteristic for the best faceoff team in the league. And you know, John Tavares had a particularly rough night in the dot. And I don't know. There were a couple things like that. They you know, a couple times they come through with big, big blocks that – maybe they end up a little bit – I don't know. I came away thinking that they can play an even slightly better game, and they're in control of some of those things.
I agree.
That's and like, I get it. I get if someone's listening and being like, well, they were in control of those things all these games and the last 5 years and Boston in 2013. And that's true. But I don't know. I don't know how else to analyze a game seven than I think they're the better team, and they've played that way.
No, I'm not saying they can't do it, because I feel like they
can. I know,
can.
I'm working through it myself, too.
And I feel as though they really, really did prove a lot last night. And I feel like the parent of the loser kid who's like, I'm still proud of you, you know, when they lose, because they're just losers, and you're like scuffing, you're doing the little head shake thing or whatever, you know, the tussling of the hair. That's the words I'm looking
tussling,
for.
Tussling.
You're tussling the hair, and you're going, I'm still proud of you. Because that's how I felt for a lot of that game, right? I just thought Matthews and Marner in overtime had their legs, and they were well-conditioned. And I'm going, these guys are in great shape. These guys are ready to play a second overtime, and I thought Tampa was gassed. And they needed that goal there. Like, had that gone to the extra frame, I don't know if Tampa had their legs. And what is incredible about Tampa Bay is I actually don't – the Leafs team is 100% better, and this is kind of where it gets to clutch versus who you trust, right, in big moments. And who were Tampa's three guys in that overtime period? Braden Point, who still had his legs and, of course, creates the play. Victor Hedman, who was steady the entire time and who seemingly, like – is there an amount of minutes that Victor Hedman can play where it's going to drop off just a little bit? And then, of course, Vasilevsky was awesome, and he just made big save after big save after big save. That's why I guess I take a little umbrage with the – Blake, I saw – like, I had a few friends text me that one too where, hey, Leafs were trying to be too cute in overtime. I went, what did you want them to do? They were the better team. Like, they got way better opportunities.
That's who they are. They're a cute team.
Totally, but a bunch of cuties. But also, it's Andrei Vasilevsky back there, and any shot that's clean going to the net, he's stopping. So you do have to be a little bit more diligent in terms of the pucks that you fire on net.
I think maybe the Giordano point shot that Matthews tipped in was sticking in people's mind of like, look, sometimes you got to get a cheapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm a big pucks on net guy. When I used to play NHL, video game, my entire premise was that I will outgame.
Shoot,
I was the just put it on net constantly. Eventually, the numbers game.
The algorithm has a set shooting percentage. It's going to regress to if I get enough shots. 100%.
I basically was the Warriors ball, where it's like where the NBA figured out that the math is just shooting threes, even if you suck. It's just like that was me in NHL, where it's like shoot. Eventually, the numbers will bear out. I guess all I'm saying with this stuff about the mentality of it is I don't know. I can feel both. The Leafs are more prepared for this than ever. Like, they look like a more mature hockey team, right? Like, last year we saw what Marner and Matthews looked like in that big spot under the brightest of lights, and they totally crumbled.
54 seconds. They came. They get down 2-0, and 54 seconds later, they scored. There was no hanging of the head of this game's half done, and we're down 2-0, even though we've played well. And look, it runs the risk of, yes, participation trophies are damning with faint praise or whatever, but this is a couple times in a row now that the Leafs have not done the thing everyone expects them to do, which is crumble at the first sign of adversity in a series. And yes, games two and four weren't the best showings of that, especially game four. But even game two, like, it was a fake comeback, but it was a good chunk of the game that they were at least pushing back. But game five and game six, this team is not doing the thing that they've done in past years. Like, you go look at their elimination games, and yes, they're 0-9 since 2004 or whatever it is now. But a lot of those were not particularly close games, or they have breaking point moments like that. So until we see it, I don't know. I'm gonna believe that, like you said, like you put it, they're a bit of a more mature team, a bit of a team that's more ready for these moments.
I hope so, because this kind of feels like, this feels like the test of Job or whatever the Bible thing is, where it's like, how much more can you take? How much more can you take? And eventually,
how forsaken we talking here?
Yeah. But also, very twisted God story. Like, what about boils, Job? Like, you still in on me with boils? He's like, ugh, I guess. it's tough. Why me? Like,
take
why?
Your wife, take your kids, take your money, take your house, give you boils. You're still coming back. You still think the Leafs are going to win a game seven covered in boils? That's right. Hockey we're gods Job. Finally give you one, Job.
I know. And this is it. It's like, I'm looking at this game seven, and this is, I guess, how I guess this is me coming around on certain things, is I really do think that this is going to be a bit of a tougher test mentally for them. That they've shown up for these games in the early parts of the series, and they have responded well. They have played well. I thought that game six was I was more impressed with them in that game six than I was in game five with them forcing the comeback, where all of a sudden you had the crowd behind you, and Tampa seemed a little shell-shocked, right? Tampa did, and they also seemed shell-shocked in that game, and I feel like if Toronto takes that lead actually at the beginning of the third period rather than at the end of the second, that the same thing happens. Tampa gets to go reset, and they get to go have their "we're champions" talk, right? But they got those lucky breaks, and that obviously changes the game, but that's the sport. But that's it. It's like, if I'm Toronto, how do you avoid that feeling of, well, what else are we supposed to do, you know? Because everybody knows people like that. And I can be like that. And I'm sure the two of you can be like that, where you feel defeated at times when you're challenged that way. When you give your best effort and it still comes up short, that's when you start to do things like, well, maybe somebody's just better than me, you know? Or maybe I'm just not cut out for this. Or maybe this just isn't for me. And you have those thoughts, those doubts. And I don't know if Jason Spezza speeches are going to be good enough for this team, right? Like, he's magical, by the way. I want to get in. He's just – he's literally a magical human. He's just – I can't believe I ever hated him as a Senator. I wish I cheered for – I should just – I would like to announce that I'm like LeBron fans now, where if Spezza signs with another organization, I will be taking my fandom to that organization. I totally get LeBron fans now, or Curry – like, you know, where they just go where LeBron goes. I'm that with Spezza now. So into retirement.
Since you brought up NHL, I've told you my Spezza thing before, right? Like, I'm in university, and obviously every Leaf fan still hates the Senators in the, like, 2004 to 2008 era. And I would just – obviously my housemates want to pick and play as the Leafs. I was the Senators all the time. If I'm doing a franchise, you're great for Spezza.
Hurts. It hurts. Yeah. It hurts. But, yes, I just – that's the mentality I hope that they can avoid. And that will be, I guess, the final test in this Game 7 is – can you still show up? Like, and this will become even more complicated for Monday's show, is what happens if the Leafs again do this and then they lose? How are we going to evaluate them? How are we going to talk about them? Like, that's what I'm saying off the top, I guess, which is normally they're just losers who lose in the most loserish way ever, right? And you can come on here and you can hammer them. And I thought about this too, because if the Leafs win, it does take away a little bit of the identity of being a Leafs fan. You guys know the joke, like, sports aren't about winning, they're about losing in a group.
Losing as a group.
And I think about that sometimes with the Leafs, where I go, part of the connection is that I have with my friends is, I can't believe this happened again, and we get to commiserate together, and it's nice. And I say that about sports all the time. Who cares? It's millionaires playing games. The reason why we care about it is the connections that we make along the way with one another through these teams, with our city, all that different stuff. It's all about connection with other people, conversations we have with other people. You win, and you lose a little bit of that.
I'm okay with that.
Sure.
Yeah, look, man.
I'll cut those people out of my life so fast.
I covered the Raptors championship. Let me tell you, the connections you make with people during a championship run, yes, just as cool as the connections you make with people during three straight losses to LeBron. I'll tell you.
Raps was different, trust though, me, because it was like the baby brothers having a moment kind of thing. And it was like,
but
oh,
I'm telling
go, baby
you right
brother,
now,
go. Yeah.
If 10 years from now we're all at the, I don't know, Canadian Hockey Hall of Fame or Canadian Hall of Sports Hall of Fame or whatever. And
when I'm getting inducted?
We're reminiscing about this. I think it's going to be a lot better. It's like, hey, Ailish, JD, remember when we covered the Leafs going on a deep playoff run? Versus, hey, Ailish, JD, remember when we covered the Leafs losing again? Didn't that make us feel like a tight little community?
Again, there's a no-brainer. I want the Leafs to win. That's very, very clear. And I think that every Leaf fan wants them to win. But I think that if you were a bit of an older Leaf fan or somebody who has watched this team for quite some time and you have deep connections to people through the Toronto Maple Leafs, like I have friendships that are rooted directly in this team, like that they are the bedrock of a friendship with people. And you question certain things and you wonder, like, there's a little bit of afraid of success. I will admit it, that like part of me worries about what a future would look like. I know that's insane because they're such losers. They haven't won anything since I was in high school. But part of me is a little worried about what it feels like to be a Leafs fan or what those relationships feel like a little bit if they were to go on and have success. I will just openly admit that is like a real consideration. And I know that there's some of you out there that are listening to that and you totally get what I mean. Like, I bet you, after the Red Sox won, it was very different being a fan of that team for years. Like, what are you supposed to do? Is it a place where you can commiserate anymore? Like, being a sports fan, again, is not as binary to me as you just root for the team to win always, and that's the whole thing that's going on. If you're a real sports fan, you're a deep sports fan, I don't think that it's that easy. I'm telling you, I just don't.
And Red Sox fans had the tough pivot that Leafs fans would have too, which is you go from being the underdog to being the most hated and annoying franchise immediately.
That part I want so badly, though. That's what that's like. You know me, and you know that all I want to do is be the most annoying human being who lived and get under everyone's skin.
4 hours a day.
I'm already doing so good at it. And think about me if like I cheered for good teams, you know, like imagine.
Yeah, unlocking that next level of JD. Yeah, but you're right, though. And, like, I think of one friend in particular who, like, we've been friends since we were little kids. We played on the same rep hockey teams together. And our friendship right now is sometimes we'll text about fantasy football league. And the bulk of it is him texting me whining about Mitch Marner. It's like, okay, well, if the Leafs win, what does that friendship look like? He's not going to text me nice things about Mitch Marner.
Exactly. This is exactly what I'm saying, is that there's just it's an outlet, right? It's an outlet for your anxieties and the way that you're upset. And so I think that you're at odds sometimes with these two feelings a little bit. And last night was weird because they were so good. They really were. Like I said, I was proud of the players on that team. I was proud of Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner. I thought William Nylander had his moments, right? Like where you went, oh my God, Willie.
He sure
like,
did. He had a forecheck on the icing call that he very much had a chance to get.
He's never going to not have his moments. But for a lot of that game, he was brilliant again. And I went, boy, William Nylander. Tavares, the way that he found it, you know? He found it. And it's funny because he gets those goals and then we go into the intermission and Elliot points out how his line is actually getting caved in. Then you go, who cares? This is a results-based business, baby. He scored a goal. He scored two big goals. And they were doing
the damn
thing.
Now let's turn to the foremost hockey expert in the world, Elliot Friedman. Yeah. Not now, Elliot. No, no.
Not now.
Don't do the journalism thing right
by
now.
The way,
no.
You can tell the Leafs are so different just in terms of the way that they resonate with people. Because, like, even Kelly Rudy's going, I'm calling. There's good feelings. You know, people want – I think that sneakily, too, that's the other part of this, is that the whole – all of Canada cares about the Leafs. Because love and hate, we all know, the fine line, blah, blah, blah. It's a fact. Like, it's a fact. Nobody out in the East Coast watched the end of the Oilers? Unless you're just psycho. Like, who cares? You just hoped you woke up to an Oilers loss. Like, right? You went, hey, I hope they lose, and it's drama, and it's fire. Too bad. They win. But everybody cares about the Leafs, and they're all awake for the Leafs. Everybody's paying attention to it. And I really felt like last night people even went, oof, you know, that's a toughie. That's a tough one to swallow because you played so well. I want to get into the ways they played well. I want to talk about reasons for optimism today. I want to talk about reasons for pessimism. Moments of the game that stuck out. But before we take the break, I want to put a smaller one in here, a smaller subset off of this, which is the officiating changed drastically in that game. And I prefer that, right? Obviously, the refs made a bad call with the camp one, but it's one where the Tampa player sells it and you see it from the other side. It's just an understandable one for me. I didn't think it was an egregious call by the official. It's an unfortunate
one. Well, when you get to watch 200 replays of it zoomed in minutes later, it adds to the anger that you feel. But in the moment, it looked like ice sticking to me.
100%. 100%. It's just that. So they were clearly doing the we're only going to call clear and obvious penalties, which I like. But then it gets into overtime, and there was a lot of liberties being taken on Austin Matthews, I thought, especially. And I went, this is why you can't do the series this way earlier. Because now you've calibrated everybody's mind to think that every single thing is a penalty. And I'm telling you right now, I liked the way that overtime was officiated in that there were no penalties. I never thought that there was anything egregious against Matthews. I think that those games should be harder to play in. And I don't want to just see whistle, whistle, whistle. Who wants to see overtime decided by a power play? Honest to God. Like, is that the world you want to live in, people? Like, no. It has to be egregious and it has to be obvious. But I just hate that the league did this again, where they go, okay, well, through the first five games, we're going to have it be where everything is called. Okay, now it's an elimination game, so we're going to put the whistles away. You cannot have it both ways. You have to choose. And I know it's such an impossible task for people, but this is what I was talking about, is I thought that if you have a big-time whistle, that the game is going to tighten up as it gets closer to the end, that refs are not going to want to decide the game into the third period. But it actually has remained, I think, a little bit more consistent in that regard. But what I didn't calibrate for was that it was going to be the later in the period, in this sense, was the later in the series. And now we're going to go into a game seven, and I'm thinking to myself, what are these Galaxy brains going to do now? Like, what is the league going to say to these guys now? Because they went from, we're calling every single penalty on the planet, every little ticky-tack thing, to, you have to stick in Victor Hedman's 8-foot-tall face in order to get a call. Like, that's the only way to do it.
All I've been begging for, and I think everybody that's watching these games wants, just some level of consistency. You want to know from game one to now game seven that this is a penalty and this isn't a penalty. And I understand the idea that, okay, overtime, maybe you let go on the whistle a little bit extra because it's overtime. But there's been how many periods of regular non-overtime hockey where it's been the standard has completely changed, or we're looking as fans also, like, we're frustrated. We're looking for reasons that the Leafs didn't win that game. And a lot of it is easy to circle, well, the 5-on-3 shouldn't have been a 5-on-3. And then they tied the game up. And I don't want to have to find reasons that are external to the Maple Leafs, like, not performing. And it seems like it's been a lot of conversation of, hey, the refs did this and the refs did this, and they've dictated the series. And game one, it was, hey, I would love to not even know who the refs are. I would love to not have one thought about the refs. And every single game throughout this series, I think we've been able to find one or two moments where the refs have dictated the play. I want to see them win a 5-on-5 hockey game. And that's exactly what game seven should be. They did. And
yeah,
they did.
This is where I'm torn. Is like, that's last night. That game to me is like, especially the first 10 or 12 minutes and then all of overtime. Like, that's the ideal of what playoff hockey looks like.
Give
to me.
Me
it's
that.
So free-flowing. It's so entertaining.
Yes.
But the trouble is, you have the first five games here where there's an average of almost 16 minutes of special teams a game. Over a quarter of those games is played in special team situations. And then last night it's 8 minutes and change out of 78 minutes. So you're dropping from 26% of the game to 11% of the game is played at special teams. That's huge. That's more
difference
than cut in half. And it's hard to point to specific examples and be like, well, that should have been a penalty. That should have been a penalty. That should have been a penalty. That's a loser mentality. And that's not the way that you want the game officiated. It's just that the contrast between the way the series has been called to the way the game was called is, it's got to be disruptive. It's got to be hard to adjust to on the fly, whether you're that physical defenseman who takes 70 minutes to learn you can get away with a little bit more, or you're that skilled forward that takes 60, 70 minutes to realize, look, I'm not getting that call. I got to just fire it on net from there.
So this is, again, my crazy brain works, but I went, Really, there was one bad penalty called in that game, and otherwise the referees, I thought, called a pretty flawless hockey game. My only point here is just that, yeah, Blake, that's a noticeable shift, and you could tell that it wasn't ticky-tack in that game. There were obvious times where I actually watched guys, like, I remember one play specifically where somebody grabbed Pierre Engvall off the rush, and it was nothing. It was like a very little tug, but I went, if that's earlier in the series, that's getting called, that's 100% a penalty, right? It's just little things like that where I go, the inconsistency. But for the most part, if they don't bite on the Tampa head fake on the camp play and the Leafs kill that PK, nobody's talking about the officials other than in glowing terms saying that's actually what we want from a playoff game. So I hope they try and replicate that one.
That's what I was going to say. If Game 7 is officiated the same way as Game 6, it's going to be all good. Everyone's going to be happy. It's going to be a really entertaining hockey game. If they go back to every ticky-tack thing gets called, that's where it's going to get really frustrating because you've established now that, hey, the officials are not going to determine the winner of this series in an elimination game, and the teams can adjust to that. And obviously both of those teams did. Again, it was a phenomenal hockey game. Taking any rooting interest out of it, it was awesome. And that better be what we see game set.
Yeah. I looked at it as Hagel missing that wide open net was so bad that...
Oh, like, my God.
By the way, Brendan Hagel...
Two firsts.
He was unquestionably, for both teams, the worst player on that I to the point where, even though it was in overtime and you knew they needed the extra legs, and he obviously drove the play that ends up in the net, which is annoying. But outside of that moment, I've never seen anybody crumble in a big game like that. Like, he was horrific. Like... Every shift, I was going, thank you, John Cooper. Every time he was on the ice, I went, oh, Coop,
keep it going,
Coop. Keep it going, Coop. Keep putting him out there, Coop. You're doing it, Coop, Coop. You're a great Leaf fan, Coop. Either way, that missed cage, I kind of balanced it in my brain of, hey, you know what? This deserves to be tied because in any reality, that gets played out a billion times. That was the one time that guy missed.
Dream about that every night.
Oh my God! Like, normally you can't show, right? They say never let him see you cry, and he goes to the bench and he did the full, like, grab your head, tilt it down.
Yeah.
I can't believe this happened. That was different than because normally when guys miss an opportunity, they do the look up at the sky and ugh, I can't believe
or
I missed that one.
Or look at the stick blade.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
I
this guy
one.
Went full, grab the bucket, and, like, his head. He was like, don't explode, head. Don't. Like, he was trying to keep all his brains in his bucket.
He had back-to-back icings. Like,
oh, my God. Yeah,
just...
no, he was bad. He was
and
so
he's,
bad.
Oh, and he's like, look, like, he almost he's looking in the glove as if he could reverse time or something,
no,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he watched Doctor Strange, and he's like, how did that guy do it? How do I spin it back?
How do I do
And this was one, too, where I looked at the possession numbers today, because sometimes it's like, oh, well, maybe I just got it in my head that that guy's having a bad game, and
stumped.
I'm not a big fan. Yeah, by far the worst possession numbers on Tampa Bay, despite starting more than half his shifts in the offensive zone.
No,
it was real
awful,
bad.
Awful, awful. Anyways, all throughout the show today, Frank Saravelli at 7, Jackie Redmond 7:30, Anthony Stewart at 8, James Myrtle at 9. Your texts, your comments throughout. How are you feeling? Positive, negative? How are you spinning that one? Who are you looking to now, too? That's the other good thing is that everybody now, the core is clicking, right? The core is playing well, and there's nobody that you're really worried about in the core, especially now that Tavares ended up hitting old JD's series props that he tweeted out, by the way. No big deal. Every single one of them was correct that I posted. Just saying. Just saying. Every single prop. Every single one of them. Let's take a break. Let's come back. And what do you got for us today?
What is a mustache?
Okay. That's perfect. It's the A-list next.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan. It's Friday. I don't know if I can say happy Friday. I'm just going to state it is Friday. Feel how you want to feel. But for the next 10 minutes, let's give you a little escape from your Maple Leafs angst or depression that's starting to creep in, or nervousness, and let's do a little A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Okay, I teased it before the break. What is a mustache? Well, Gabe Kapler, manager of the Giants, has started the next great internet debate. The Giants are doing Mustache May, where proceeds are donated to Bring Change to Mind, a nonprofit organization that ends the stigma surrounding mental health issues. But it seems like the players and Gabe are a little confused to if they qualify as having a mustache. Here's the audio clip of Gabe explaining the confusion.
Okay, so this is about mustaches, since it's Mustache May. And I was talking to some of our players who have full beards. If you have a full beard, do you also have a mustache?
No.
No. Okay, so here's my counter to that. If you go to the barber shop and you have a full beard, the barber may say, would you like me to leave your mustache a little bit longer? Doesn't that mean that you have a mustache?
No.
This guy's a psycho. Honestly, this is the most psycho answer in the history of anything. What are you talking about, Gabe Kapler? This is a guy who's trying to be cute and funny. It's like, no, you're psychotic when you say that. Of course a beard is not a mustache. What, like, Blake, you as a person who has a beard are the person who should be speaking first, but I'm outraged that this man has tried to make this a thing. I'm outraged.
First of all, if I went to my barber and Taylor asked me, Blake, do you want me to leave your mustache a little longer?
Yeah.
I would say, first of all, Taylor, no, absolutely not. Who leaves the mustache longer? I'm not
Ron
in
Ron Swanson?
Yeah, I'm not in that weird commercial about living in the suburbs and Leon's or whatever. No, absolutely not. Do I want to leave the mustache? Who would ask that? That's a terrible look. Second, no, it's not. That's like, you can have it can be a part of a larger whole.
You're so flustered. See, this is so dumb. Ailish, though, I'm outing you. So be prepared to be outed. Ailish wrote, side note, this guy is a rocket, about Gabe Kapler in our group chat. And this is the problem with guys who are too handsome, and same with girls who are too beautiful, is that you get the confidence to say things that you think are profound because everyone around you, it's the John Hamm in 30 Rock thing, right? Where he's a doctor, but it's purely on that.
No one will tell him he's wrong because he's so beautiful.
Exactly. So everyone just lets him get through life being a total moron. And this is Gabe Kapler here with the mustache thing. As he goes, isn't this funny? And people go, oh my God, Gabe, it's so funny. I never really thought about it that way. We've all thought about it that way, Gabe. And it's not the case. It's not the case.
It's like,
you're
handsome. If you order a pizza, are you like, hey, do you want a pepperoni? I have a pepperoni. No, you have a pizza. You're offering someone a slice of pizza.
Yes.
I'm not offering someone a slice of my beard.
Gabe Kapler. He's so handsome. You can say whatever you want. No.
Also, just the idea that you have a beard and a mustache and
both
exist
together
as separate entities in the one suggests that someone would ever have a beard without the mustache, which I'm sure has been done.
Strap.
I'm
sure it's called a chin strap.
That's not that's different though, because that's not the full beard. That's like the only 16-year-olds who are just growing facial hair and learning to shave for the first time might
do
that.
So, do you have a beard? And what about your sideburns? What if they carry
not
into a beard?
Either.
Okay, I'm just asking what the parts are.
So here's the thing. I can only grow like a disgusting mustache and also a chin strap. So I could only have the worst. Ailish, I would like to actually – I think that's the more interesting question is when does it officially become a beard? Like what of your facial hair needs to exist for it to be a beard?
I think somebody's able to notice it without being 1 centimeter from your face.
Yeah, but we have some definitions.
There are two qualifiers, and one is like – first, you just go to the cheek area, right? And it's because sideburns don't come down that far unless you're doing like the old Dustin McGowan thing. And a goatee doesn't go out past the lip line.
A goatee is a goatee.
If you Yeah, if you've got that kind of, there's like, let's say a 3-finger space between your lip line and your sideburn, where
this.
Your sideburns would be, if there's anything there,
so analytical.
You're trying to grow a beard. But the big one is, I'd say when you have an actual beard is the connector points, which is a lot of people grow the beard and there's nothing here, right? It's like you almost have mutton chops and then a little bit of a mustache and then a little bit
of a chin. Yeah, that's why we have different words for different types of beards, adjacent things, is because we can define them. This is your classic, I can't define a beard, but I know one when I see one. That's this is one of those.
It's the newest, greatest internet debate.
When I see a beard, I don't think that man has a mustache. That's for sure. So, shut
and
up.
And I'll tell you
he's got pretty much our whole look going on.
Our board op, Josh, just texted in and said, well, didn't David Ortiz have it? And a beard without a mustache? And A, yes, he did. B, it looked silly. C, he eventually went to having the thin mustache on top because it looks way better and is way more logical than just having a beard with no mustache.
No, you can have a beard without a mustache, no doubt. I'm pretty sure Habib had one too, and that's possible. But you cannot. Anyway, we can't keep going. We need to move on.
Too much conversation about beards.
No, perfect enough. Yeah. That was a great A-list topic.
Thank you. So, we know recruiting players for your beer league team is not always the easiest thing. People like to flake out or don't commit to a full season. So, one woman in Rhode Island had a really smart, special way to boost her roster. No, not that type of roster, the kickball team roster, but she was using Tinder. So she dubbed herself as Kickball Cupid. She recruited over 40 people to her local kickball team through Tinder and then was banned from the dating app forever. She said she initially joined Tinder to meet people romantically, but then thought, wow, I could be using this in such a much more powerful way, and started recruiting people to her team. She was very devastated to hear that she was banned for life one morning, but she has been using other apps such as Bumble, Bumble BFF, and Hinge to continue to recruit to her kickball team.
What a dorky move by Tinder to kick her off for doing this. Why would you...
Who cares what you're using it for if you're using
it? Like, no offense to Tinder, but pretty sure worse things happen on there than a girl recruiting people to kickball. So for that to be their, line that they draw in the sand when it comes to things they won't accept on that app seems a little flawed and strange. I will say this. You'd be devastated if she was, you know, we've all taken shots. I think we've all used the apps in this group. You know, when you take a shot at someone where you go, this person's probably out of my league. And then they actually match you and you go, wow, okay, this is an interesting one. All right, let's see how we go with this. If she is that and you hit it and then the response is, I'm not really looking to meet anyone romantically, but you want to kickball?
You play kickball?
I just picture all these simps showing up for kickball, all thinking they're going to be the guy that convinces this girl that they're going to be the one who actually dates her and that this is just an opportunity to meet her and failing epically. And all she really wants to do is play kickball. There's no ulterior motive. And you end up with all these guys who are being overly aggressive and competitive at kickball because they want to show who's the alpha to this girl. That's the world I want to live in. That's the fun.
I could do that for a beer league hockey team, maybe. All the Sims would be running. Maybe.
Got a team.
I want to fit one last one in here. I want to fit one last one here because it was certainly one that was popping off last night on Twitter if you haven't had a chance to see it. But the 3-year anniversary of the Kawhi shot was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And the Sixers were once again sent packing, this time at the hands of the Miami Heat. Lots of focus was on Harden, who only attempted 2 shots in the second half, got 0 points in an elimination game. But Embiid, post-game, was talking to the media and had a very interesting quote on his teammate, James Harden. So, Josh, let's roll that clip.
I mean, I don't know. I think he's been, obviously, I'm sure, since we got him, everybody expected the Houston James Harden. But that's not who he is anymore. He's more of a playmaker. I thought, at times, could have been, as all of us, could have been more aggressive, all of us, whether it's Tyrese or Tobias or, guys coming off the bench.
Okay, so the last part
I know you have lots of thoughts on this.
Well, okay, this is an insane thing for an athlete to say on the surface, right? Because this is 2 years in a row now where Joel Embiid has sewered his co-star after the team's exit. But here's the crazy part about it. Both times, he's totally right. Like, Ben Simmons completely choked, and now James Harden showed up here, and I don't think that anybody, including Daryl Morey, made that trade thinking James Harden's just going to show up here and be somebody that's going to take two shots in an elimination game when it's on the line. Like, did you, Blake? Like, I thought he was quitting on Brooklyn and was going to show up and be closer to Houston Harden. That those two guys were going to work in concert with one another. Not that he was going to turn into, like, a pure passer who reluctantly shoots. Like, Joel Embiid is... gotta be criticized for doing this twice in a row with a co-star, but yet not because he's so 100% right both times. I don't know what to make of it. I'm totally in a pretzel.
No, it's James Harden turned into Jose Calderon with a beard and a mustache. It's bad. And Harden, like, the lack of sense of there are legacy points on the line and there are reputation points on the line. Like, at this point, I don't love to do the psychological stuff, but James Harden's playoff track record is enough that you got to question the level of care or the level of, you know, I don't even know how you phrase it, but this is a long stretch of not showing up. Yeah, I know you said it, loser, but...
Well, no, but Blake, Zach Lowe, who's been on the show, by the way, you know, comes on the big show. By the way, Zach Lowe.
Go Big Green.
Zach Lowe of this show, who is here, he called him guard Karl Malone. And it is the most perfect and appropriate comparison in the history of comparisons. I just, to take two shots in a second half, how does, like, both Doc Rivers and Embiid were at the podium defending themselves. And I go, all right, that's not what we're used to in pro sports, because everyone has to be like, you win as a team, you lose as a team, and that's what you're all taught. But I feel for Embiid, man. Like, he's just... this is awful luck. He's finally healthy. You know, we go, Embiid's entire blockade to his career success is health. And then he's healthy and he plays great. And he gets saddled with Ben Simmons and James Harden, the two biggest losers in the modern NBA. It's just, how does this happen?
Not even healthy, injured, but able to play through it and still play at that level. Right, Harden won an MVP not very long ago. It certainly looks a different way now, with a couple more playoff failures on top. Austin Matthews might win the Hart Trophy. Does it look different if the Leafs are eliminated on Saturday? We'll talk to Frank Saravelli about it next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.